Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a house.
Well, I'm up at Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. This is Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 375. NASDAQ Futures up 1975. We had an off day yesterday. We continue to move forward. We have a Fed meeting starting today. Announcement tomorrow. And we have Paul Tudor Jones. How come Brendan doesn't have it? Is he a Brendan Tudor Cornan or something? He's not a three. You either got it. The way I look at it in this world, if you don't even have, if you either have three words working for your name or one. If you're one of the schlumps like me with two, you're just one of the schlumps. Just saying.
I don't think you're a schlump, Chief.
Well, I'm in a relative schlump. If I was, I'm nowhere near the same as like Madonna or Pele or somebody like that.
Yeah, but you're
now,
the Chief.
Well, there's a million Chiefs out there. And you're just.
No, there's only one Chief.
But like,
Manny can attest that there's only one Chief, right, Manny?
That's right.
But you either have to have a number after your name, three names, or one name. The two name route is just very, what should we say, bourgeois? Is that what that is?
It could be worse. You could have two first names. That's really a confusing thing.
Or the same name. I knew I was in great books with a kid named Cullen Cullen.
That should be a crime against his parents.
Yeah, it's
that's ridiculous. Who would do that?
I think one of the, I probably shouldn't use anybody's name on the air, but say it's a very well-known family, and so the lady marries and has to take the guy's name, right? Or does. I don't know if she had to.
Mm-hmm.
So the kid is not one of the, you know, sort of like the Roosevelt names, so they named the kid like Roosevelt for his first name. Wasn't Roosevelt, but so, you know.
Well, you know, something along that line, you've got Patrick Daley Thompson, the alderman from Chicago, to make sure that Patrick Thompson doesn't have the same panache as Daley in politics in Chicago.
True. Well, what about the dude who was, he was Pritzker, and that was his name, right? And he started his own law firm, and the Pritzkers, were all over him to not use the name, and he goes, hey, it's my name, I get to use it. Was it Pritzker?
Yeah, that's usually an exception to the trademark laws. I think if you're using your own name, that, you know, I don't think you could change your name. So like he could not go to court and change his name to J.B. Pritzker so that he could start a law firm and said, well, it's my name at a certain point. Yeah, but if he was born that way and that was his name from birth, I think he could use it without any problem.
Well, so we showed up in the wrong name. We only got two names, so we're out.
Yep.
You could go to the. Yeah. Can't you be a. You know, I actually could be a Thomas Howe III. I could go that route. Because I'm
Andrew
III. I was never a junior either, even though my dad had the same name. I don't think they were big on that. Southside people don't do that.
No. And in fact, my son is named Brendan, and we have a different middle name so that he would not be a junior.
Ah, all right. Well, there you go. Even though he is a little Brendan, so he's sort of a junior.
Yeah, sort of a junior.
Oh, God. What?
But not officially a junior. He doesn't get to use junior in his name when he writes it out, and I can't use senior in my name, so I'm never going to be a senior.
Believe me, you can use senior. I think I could, too. Anyway, so Paul Tudor Jones says if, depending on the Fed's announcement, you should either go all in on the inflation trades, which he considers commodities, crypto, and gold. I think it's kind of late for that. I mean, but maybe not for gold. I sure hope not, because I still got some of that stuff. I see the Fed caught in a box here, Brendan. I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, it's they must know. I mean, it's reaching ridiculous stages that you can go into. I was in the Restaurant Depot, and the Hispanic guy in the cooler, as I'm standing there freezing my short sleeve shirt. Hey, these prices, all I do is raise them. What's going on? He says to me. Well, how does he seem to recognize it in the, the Fed? How do you figure out, though, when everybody, and I know two things, Brendan, and you don't know the solution. One is you can have supply disruptions that affect the price of individual items, right? I mean, biggest example of that was probably the Arab oil embargo and the 73 war. Was it the 73 war? Well, it was something like, I forget what the different ones were.
73 or 76?
Somewhere in there. There was the embargo was 73. Maybe the embargo was 73. Anyway, you can have things like that which give a shock to an important commodity, and it would work its way through the system to some extent. But the idea that you would have general inflation, and this is what I think, you know, most people have learned, that they actually try and study some monetary theory. Of course, we're trying to get rid of that now. What is it with the U.S. scrubbing history books now and scrubbing economic theories and not giving people information? Is this, even for somebody who's relatively liberal, do you find that a problem?
Yes, I do. I think that's a terrible problem. Because, you know, a lot of at least the ideology of our country was that you learn the truth. Even if you don't like it, you at least acknowledge it. And it's like doublespeak or newspeak from 1984, George Orwell, that whoever's in power rewrites the history books, or what the Chinese did.
Why do you suppose that, without taking a political shot here, it's that used to be, certainly in your lifetime, what people would accuse the Republicans of doing, and now it seems like that's what the Democrats. How did that flip over? I mean, how does Biden, for instance, say okay with the Fed like not giving out numbers anymore? I mean, maybe you could see, you know, Tricky Dick not doing that, even though he never did, by the way. He didn't when he put his wage price controls in, which didn't work. He didn't say, "Let's stop giving people CPIs; we'll fool them." I mean, even he had a respect for some sort of tradition. I mean, now these guys, they don't have any. I mean, what happened? I guess is my question.
Well, I think it's very interesting if you look at the arc of history, how both the political parties right now have flipped in many ways from who their core constituencies are. I mean, just think, if you were to look at the Congress in the 40s and the 50s, you would see a solid block of blue in the southern states. And I think if you were to ask anybody, or tell that to anybody who's, say, under 30, under 40...
Yeah, but they were colored blue.
They had a hard time believing.
But, Brendan, they were colored blue. They weren't blue. They weren't... They surely, as far as I weren't
what
liberal.
I meant is Democrats.
Yes,
Democrats. And a solid blue in the Democratic vote. And then after the Voting Rights Act in 1965, they flipped, and now they're all Republican. But I think also the ideology of a lot of people who are in the Republican Party right now and the Democratic Party have kind of flipped. The Democrats have become a lot more of the college-educated folks, and the blue-collar workers seem to be more on the Republican side.
Yes.
Now, that's not hard and fast, but I think that's flipped, and if you go back 30, 40, 50 years, it was the opposite. The Democrats were the party of the working class, and the Republicans' party was the white shoe class, the silk stocking class. And it seems to have flipped over the arc of history, which I think is consistent with what we're saying about Biden and the Democrats, with economic theory being erased and rewritten.
Well, how do we go from... I certainly recall, and of course I haven't been in school in a while, but Notre Dame was the liberal bastion of Catholicism. I mean, they had priests that would go to, one guy would go to church and he would, ask all the kids that were like age between the ages of 5 and 8 to come sit on the altar close to him so they could pay attention to what was going on better. And there are all kinds of stuff that really made a lot of sense. And and a lot of the sermons were I won't say liberal, but they were, well, in my mind, they were liberal. They were almost revolutionary, you know, in what churches should do and what, you know, how many wars have been fought in the name of religion, and we don't need to be doing that. I mean, it was very, I would say, I don't want to use the term liberal because that has a definition now that it doesn't fit. But mm-hmm. And if you had an independent thought, you were respected. It wasn't, I mean, provided you were rigorous in the thought. I mean, Hesburgh's mm-hmm. thing was if you don't want to take finals because of Vietnam, well, that's fine. You don't have to take the final, but I better have a 10-page paper here researching Vietnam and why it's wrong and where we went afoul and what you would do differently. It wasn't like you didn't get it. You stopped thinking for 2 weeks. You know, he said, okay,
yeah,
that's
what you didn't get to walk away from
right.
class.
yeah. So, but it was a whole different mindset that if somebody had a different position and could defend it, you felt, even if you didn't agree with it, you would learn from their research and learn from their point mm-hmm. of view. But now it seems like the people who are the Democrats seem to think they're the most educated. They want to tell you what you can learn. That's a whole yeah. different program than what I had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying. And where does that come from? And how do people get the idea they can tell people that? What you can read and what you can't?
Well, I think it's just evolved from reactions. That, you know, the pendulum is swinging in two different directions right now. And people are getting entrenched with views on either side of the pendulum swing. And nobody wants to listen to the other side. You know, when I was a young lawyer, the mentor of my firm used to have this saying that when people were getting into a disagreement over documents and transactions, that he said, let's just stop for a minute. And I need to be able to tell you to your satisfaction what your position is. And you need to tell me to my satisfaction what my position is. And once we can do that, then we can move forward because we know we're talking the same language and know what we can agree upon. And I still remember that advice to this day, and I think it's very, very helpful when things are getting heated. And I don't see any connection that many people in our society have right now to even be willing to state the other side's opinion. Because usually where they're starting from is wrong and just elevating the heat instead of lowering the heat and arguments.
Brendan, I have in my voluminous, I'll call it a file system since you haven't been here in a while and maybe you forgot what it looks like. In my file system, I have an article that I probably could find if my life depended on it, having to do with how people have sort of gotten this way. It's a very pragmatic sort of article, and it has to do with you and I and Maddie and the listeners have all figured out that our vote is basically worth crap in terms of numerical voting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it really isn't worth, especially in this day and age where people want you to work 60 hours a week for nothing in some places, that it's not worth your time to really be up on the issues and be an informed voter. So you essentially offload that to people you think you feel that you think that you have a like point of view too. So in other words, if you're conservative, which I think those guys lock in there more because the liberals, in their own mind anyway, don't think that they lock in with anybody. They're just liberal. But, I mean, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the conservatives really want to identify with the conservatives. You know, we don't want to take that too far. But what I'm saying is, so according to this article, is you end up offloading your view on the issues, for lack of a better term, to whatever side your people are at. So if somebody mm-hmm. if somebody drops one on you, you're not gonna research the issue yourself because it's really not worth it in terms of your influence on the government, the people, the taxation, whatever it is. And you really can't argue that unless you are have an awful lot of money and can you know influence other people or something. I mean, come on. I mean, my vote could be, you know, they could drag. This is gonna sound awful. They can drag some homeless person out and you know give him $5 and send him to the voting thing and his vote equals mine. All right, which mm-hmm. I think I don't want it any other way in terms of how you write it. But most people look at that and they say, well, that's sort of interesting, you know, right? I mean, that's why people don't really want other people to vote. I mean, they think that their vote should count more if they're paying more taxes. And, you know, I don't agree with that, but I surely understand where they're coming from, right? So what ends up happening is an issue drops down there. Let's see, should Matty Weber wear shorts to work? And then, wait a minute, what do the conservative people think versus the liberal? Well, the conservatives would say no. They want everybody wearing suits. And who knows if they do or they don't, but
well,
just an example.
I think if Matty goes to Brooks Brothers, although they're closed now, but if he goes to Brooks Brothers and had a pair of custom shorts made or Bermuda shorts, you know, the formal business worn Bermuda, I think it's fine.
Can you see Matty in Brooks Brothers?
I can just see Matty with a Brooks Brothers pinstripe navy blue pair of shorts and a nice belt and maybe even a vest and a sports coat.
You
and
see,
I think that should pass muster in your office, Chief.
You see, Brennan, I'm being a normal-sized human, which you don't get, is that when I was 6'4", and I'm now probably 6'2", I could never shop at Brooks Brothers. They didn't have any talls, and Matty's is taller than me, so he would not be a Brooks Brothers guy. He probably could get a shirt there, maybe. That's about it. Just saying.
Well, the point is that I think that you know, certainly it depends on the quality of the clothes you have. But you're right. I mean, going back to your point about the encampments of both sides of the political spectrum and who's listening to what news, I try to listen to programs, news programs on both sides of the spectrum. Both MSNBC and Fox News. I routinely will watch some Fox News in order to see how both sides are playing the issues. And it's always very interesting to me to see on a particular night what stories one program is showing that the other isn't, or if they're covering the same story, what's the perspective that the reporters are giving it. It's very interesting. And, you know, there are things that I question on both sides, the way that it's being presented, as well as what is being shown on the news programs and what's been omitted compared to the other program. And then there's also a lot of mainstream that I think is trustworthy and objective, things like the Wall Street Journal. See how the Wall Street Journal will cover the same article or the same news item, just to give me a different perspective that's, you know, somewhere between the far left and the far right in their presentation of the news.
What do you where do you come down on the, is there really decent news? I mean, for the first time in a long time, other than piling through online, Audrey actually got the Tribune delivered for 12 weeks or something. I went through it. Brendan, I haven't even though I get it delivered, I never look into it because it comes with the, I get it delivered on Sunday so I can get it online. That thing is it a quarter of what it used to be, even though it costs 10 times as much? I mean, that's no newspaper. There's no reporting there.
Yes, it is. It's really sad to see what's happened to the Tribune now. I should say that I subscribe and I get hard copies of the Wall Street Journal, the Tribune, and the Sun-Times every day, and I kind of flip through them for news reports. And like today when I'm in Michigan, I look at them online to just scan to see what's going on. And I do that because the Sun-Times is a great newspaper for local politics in Chicago, much more than any other paper. So if I want to find out what's going on in the city, I flip through the Sun-Times. You know, if I want more national, traditional news, I look at the Wall Street Journal. And then for broader implications, not necessarily Chicago politics, but broader things around the city of Chicago and the Midwest and national and international, I look at the Tribune. That's the first one that I go through. But it's shocking to me how the coverage of the Tribune and the how thick the Tribune is has declined in the last, say, 5 years.
Even the sports section. Sports section is 5 pages long or six on Sunday.
It's 6 pages, yeah. And it used to be like 20 pages,
yeah,
15 pages. It was much, much more detailed. And right now, when you look at the Tribune, it's hard to find last night's scores. When, you know, they'll always say later edition or something. And I'm not talking about when the games are on the West Coast, which you kind of expect that because the games would end at like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning here in Chicago. But even a game in Chicago or even on the East Coast sometimes is not reported in the morning Tribune, which I find appalling. And that's really a decline in their coverage.
Maybe this is a Matty Weber question. Well, not the first one. How many editions did they used to have, and how many do they have now?
Oh, I think they used to. I think the Tribune used to have at least three editions. They had the early morning edition, they had the morning edition, and they had the final edition. And they were separated by a couple of hours. And I think it was the middle one of those that usually got delivered to your home.
I'm going
to
take.
But the, also remember, we used to have at least four daily papers. We had the Tribune and the Sun-Times in the morning, the Chicago American and the Daily News in the afternoon, and the American became Chicago Today.
I'm going to say the Tribune, because I used to go get it from my grandfather, because he wanted Tomorrow's News Today was his comment. They would show up at 6 o'clock the night before, and that was called the That was called the Chicagoland edition, I think.
Could
and then,
be.
And then there was one that was real early in the morning that the newspaper delivery boys got, and it was kind of there was one after it was after the one that came out at six, obviously. But then there was the final that came out, like, if you got off the train downtown at 7, yours was another edition that was more advanced or more late-breaking than the one that you got delivered to your house, correct? And then there was one that came out at 11 o'clock that was the turf edition, right, if you were on the track. It had a new sports section in it with all the horses.
So there the first three that you just mentioned correspond to the three that I mentioned earlier. The time difference is a little bit longer than... but yeah, I think you're right. It was one like late in the evening, then early in the morning it was delivered to the home, and the one you got when you got off the train.
Then it was one later in the morning that had the horse racing and all the other stuff. I think. But the one that you got at home had all the stock and everything closings. That's what my grandfather was into. But I guess where I'm sort of going with this, Brennan, is I see nobody questioning what the Fed's doing on these announcements today. I mean, I'm starting to see, and this is again maybe a conspiracy theorist, maybe because we had Wayne Manson back on. Something is wrong here, Brendan. Something is seriously wrong with the way we're governing. And I've heard from, especially my lovely girlfriend has gotten kind of right wing on me, and her friends are seriously right wing, and they say really. You know what? They say some of the dumbest stuff. Not dumb. I shouldn't use that term. But, you know, like one was accusing Biden of bringing in the inflation just like Jimmy Carter. And I'm saying, Biden's been there for 5 months. This has been going on since 2007. And the person who was telling me about Jimmy Carter forgot all about Nixon's wage and price controls. People can get a very convenient memory in all this stuff, depending on your point of view. And what I'm noticing is, I'm noticing a trend myself. But the trend I'm noticing is totally different, Brennan, and you're my counselor. I'm noticing that who's ever gotten people fighting against each other is taking full advantage. What the Fed is doing right now is not even close to being, in my mind, their job. They are preferencing rich people over the rest of us, because the rest of us are too dumb collectively to realize that inflation is the cruelest tax of all. And they're willing to do that just to maintain asset prices, meaning stock prices and stuff, at a level to where rich people get even richer or stay rich and probably give them the high sign before things collapse, if they collapse. So, I mean, something is seriously wrong. I mean, it's way more important right now to keep a stock like Zoom or something like that at 200 times earnings than it is to worry about a regular person prices going up next week on him without a raise. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't know where we.
Two things you said there. First is that, you know, Biden getting the blame for inflation, but, you know, I think we're quick to point out that regardless of who's in office, if anything goes bad, it's on his watch, and so he's therefore responsible. And he's so far, we haven't had a woman president. But not so quick to give credit when credit is due. And there's no understanding of the lag time that it's, you know, like inflation, as you pointed out, didn't happen on January 21st. It happened, it's been a continuum for a long period of time. So whoever's in office shouldn't get all the blame or all the credit, especially 5 months into a term. It takes some time to see how principles work out and the lagging factor of everything else. So, yeah, I think that we're missing that a lot on both sides.
But I fault him, honestly, and I don't know that it didn't happen, for not looking at the same thing I'm looking at and saying to Jay Powell, what the bleep are you doing? mean, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't tell me that the $30 billion that they poured into the money into the system last week has anything to do with helping somebody who hasn't gotten a raise that just sees his food prices go up 10%. I mean, you mm-hmm. might as well eviscerate the guy. I've been on record for 10 years doing the show and said the way we're doing this with people not getting raises and things just percolating along and median income's not going and some structural things just going up all the time. If we get what I use the term regular inflation, it'll be the cruelest thing we've ever done to our population. And yet, here it is. I sure as hell didn't want to be right, Brendan, but here it is now. And it's been coming for...
I also agree with your comment that inflation is a cruel tax. However, there's a big difference between it being a tax and being truly a tax, in that tax revenues go for the public good as far as things like roads, healthcare, not ideally, but the idea of inflation really just goes into the pockets of private sector.
Well, and to the extent that... if we had anybody who had the stones to make these people pay taxes, the fact that Home Depot can give a 20% rise in lumber prices and raise the prices 70, in theory, mm-hmm. the federal government's getting a piece of that. Of course, I don't know if they ever do. And plus, the piece is down so low at 21% that it's kind of laughable. But it should sort of flow through at least a little bit of it. It should.
It should, but I don't think it is.
I don't think it is. No, no, I don't think it is at all.
And that's the danger. But even if it did flow all the way through, it wouldn't be flowing through at 100%. It would be flowing through at whatever the tax rate is, whether it's 21% or whatever the individual tax rate is. So it's a much lesser percentage.
Well, next week, we got a dash, Brendan, but next week, let's dig into some of the stupid stuff I did in college where I assume a 35 or 50% tax rate. The professor really should have said, assume it for the people that are dum-dums, and for the rest of the people, it's 5%. Imagine what would that have done to all the exams and all the papers.
Or even 2%, or 3%.
Take care, buddy. SP Futures up 450. SP Futures up 16. We're right back. Mr. Joel Uncannon.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali, just Matt Weber on the board. Hey, man, I just got a flash here, or actually just saw it. I must have got it earlier from the Tribune that we've been disparaging, saying that the Sox, Elroy Jimenez, is cleared for baseball activities. That's about 4 months early, isn't it? Good for him.
Yeah, he's not cleared to fully participate, but he's clear to begin activities, like you said, down in Arizona. So I don't know how long that rehab's going to be. Is it 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks?
We're talking four, but dude, still, that's way good news.
It's great, absolutely.
Good, I think he's one of the good guys. At least I think he is, but we'll S&P Futures up 475, NASDAQ Futures up 18 and a quarter. Dow Futures down 5, I don't see any stacks. Oh, we got Boeing up $1.81. They seem to, one of the news out of Europe is that either they're close to resolving the 17-year issue where Airbus is getting subsidies and Boeing is getting subsidies, and Trump, you know, threw some tariffs down because of that. And gee, Manny, do you think really that Boeing and Airbus both get subsidies? Are we supposed to be frogs and not realize that, or what? I mean, dude, I'm shocked. There's gambling going on in this establishment. DAX up 85.5%, FTSE up 24.3%, CAC around up 30.5%. In Asia, we've got Nikkei up 279, that's a full percent. Shanghai down 33, which is a full percent, which is... These guys go in opposite directions every day is one of the most interesting things of the last 6 months, man. They comment on every day. I have no idea why it's going on. Hang Seng down 203.7. So we got Japan with a significant up, and mainland and Hong Kong with a significant down, which same day. Yesterday, the Dow was down 85. S&P, however, was up 7. NASDAQ was up 104. So I'm going to say, except for a couple of Dow stocks, it was a positive day. Bonds. 1.49, that's down 1 basis point. Minus 0.25. Japan, positive 0.05, so they're actually creeping back higher. They were down to 0.03. UK, 0.73. Oil is up 64 cents, 71.52. That's several days in a row now on oil. Brent, up 66 cents, 73.52. Natural gas up a penny, 3.36. RBOB unchanged at 2.18. We've got gold up 20 cents. 1866, silver down 30, 2773, copper down 17, 435. You really haven't been able, other than copper and steel companies, you really haven't been able to make money in this impending inflation in gold and silver like you would have expected. I don't know if it's just lagging or it's just not going to happen. Crypto, Bitcoin up 98 bucks to 39,746. I think it traded over 40 yesterday again, maybe. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues on the Kennedy. First, on the inbound side, there's a crash that's just been moved to the right shoulder at Harlem, and that's causing some delays as you're coming on the inbound Kennedy. And then just west of there on the outbound side, we had an earlier crash at Canfield. That crash supposedly has been removed, but there's all kinds of congestion, stop-and-go traffic on the outbound side right in that same area. So you'll see a slowdown in both directions right near Harlem. On the Kennedy, so keep that in mind. Once you get past that, it clears up nicely. No issues there. Edens is not affected either. Edens looking good in both directions. Eisenhower and Stevenson, traffic starting to build, but no accidents to report. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. We have police activity on the south side. Morgan Street between 63rd and 59th is closed due to multiple gunshot victims that happened earlier this morning. And then out in Elgin, northwest suburbs, there's a crash at Route 25, just as it crosses Illinois 58. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, another beautiful weather day. Partly cloudy skies, a high of 74, a bit warmer than that inland, and a nice breeze out there. Right now it's crystal clear and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, not so much. Sunny with a high of 117. That's a little too hot for me.
It's too hot.
Right now it's clear and 88. It's already 88 there, and it's 4:30 in the morning. For our, in sports, not a good night for our baseball teams, and a little bit of coincidence as well. The White Sox were in a first-place battle with the Tampa Bay Rays, two best teams in baseball right now record-wise, and they lost at home last night 5-2. Cubs in a first-place battle as well with the first-place Cubs taking on the first-place Mets in New York, and they lost by, you guessed it, 5-2. And then the Diamondbacks played the Giants, and they lost by the same score of 5-2. So not a good night for any of our baseball teams. And then you throw in the Irish, who were one game away from qualifying for the College World Series in Omaha, and they were blown out by Mississippi State 11-7. Chief.
Joel, how are you, bud?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday?
I'm doing okay. I was just wondering how Maddie's going to get the excuse to grab his bro and sneak out for a round of golf today, because this is about the nicest day I've seen in years.
That's a good idea.
A little golf, you know?
A little cooler here today, mid-70s, but that's my kind of weather. The 70s, low 80s, don't like it too hot, but get out there, Maddie, hit the round. I think this is on the weekends, you know, you get stuck behind a slow foursome, and it's kind of rough. Try and sneak out on the late day after the close with my nephew when I can.
That's
tough
the way to
sport,
do it.
Though, Chief. But I happen to pick the two sports as a kid that you just got to practice to be good. I was a swimmer and a golfer. And those are two sports where you just cannot slack at all. You got to practice. Contrary to what Allen Iverson says, you got to practice.
Well, there are people that are good enough that maybe they don't have to, but they're few and far between, boy. I mean,
For those sports, you got to practice.
You got to practice
a lot. You have to practice.
Well, I mean, I'm saying there are people that I knew that were on, like, the Notre Dame golf team, and then they got stuck in some job where they didn't play for, like, 3 years and went out and they were sucked into a charity match and went out and shot 75 or something. I mean,
that depends. Yeah. But, boy, I bet you you're sitting on pins and needles over this Fed meeting, Chief.
They're going to come out and say, we're going to line the pockets of rich people, we don't care about the rest. Is that going to be the announcement?
I don't know. And tell me if I'm, you know, being a negative Nelly, but I'm just trying to see how the market can have a good reaction to what they do. Because if they say they're going to taper, right, and whatever way they do it, and we know, you know, there's other ways besides lowering rates, the market's going to be spooked. If they're not doing anything, then everyone, you know, they're not fighting inflation. They're going to get kicked in the butt. So, it's hard to be bearish this market under any technical circumstances, but how could there be a positive outcome?
Well, I think the positive outcome is it's in the short term. Now, it's way longer than I thought it was going to be. But right now, if you look and see, I mean, you and I talk about this damn near every week. The dumbest trade on earth would be to put your money with somebody for like 0% now for 5 years. When the value of the dollar is going down by the week, all you got to do is go to the store and try and buy a car. So it's such a horrible trade. Yet, if you decide, like I have, unfortunately, and maybe a little early, to have not very small positions, but if you invest, say, in the TLT, thinking this thing has got to go down because these bonds aren't going to be paying this much anymore, and the Fed runs out and buys $30 billion worth of stuff this week and drives it right where the sun don't shine on you, they have that kind of power. I mean, even though their position might be wrong, $30 billion a week is a lot of dough. I mean, it's hard for you and me to fight that. So the more they do that, the more they put it off, I'll say. But, you know, you would say that the ending is going to be worse and worse, but so far it hasn't. So it's really be tough for you and I to get on national TV and say, wow, there's going to be an end game to this, when we've been saying that for 4 years. They just keep upping the amount of money. But you and I look at it and say, geez, is this Fed balance sheet really going to be like $100 trillion someday, and they're still not going to back off? I don't know. What do you think they think? It's too high. It looks to me like they don't think it's ever going to be too high, Joel.
No, and I mean, and what's, you know, so perplexing is, you know, even, you know, if they do any kind of tapering move, You know, you, what's the infrastructure package? I mean, you know, it's the same thing, right? Pumping money into the economy. The only thing, and right now, the only thing that really makes me think that the Fed's really going to stand pat here is the way, you know, the PLT has had a nice rally. I mean, but, you know, you look at, yeah, what's a nice rally, right? It was 180, it went to, you know, 130 and change. But, you know, if you follow technical patterns, it's finding support right in the area that it did pre-COVID. And the banks have peeled back, right? J.P. Morgan pulled back, pretty substantially from 167 of 10 points off its all-time high. Bank America, lower beta, lower price stock, that's moved back. So, you know, so to me, you know, the way the banks are traded, that, you know, did all, I like to call them Pump and Powell on my show. Pump and Powell's not going to do much. And essentially that's, you know, by not taking rates up more, that's not good for the banks. So that's the tea leaves in the market. We got what, you know, one day today of trading. Market's still strong, making new all-time highs. One thing I did notice yesterday is, you know how we have, like, the fluff overnight, and, you know, we get these big gains overnight, and they don't give you a chance to get in unless you're in, you know, with the previous position, you get in overnight. Yesterday was different in the fact that we eroded the pre-market gains. We were lower. We were 10, 12 points lower. You know, it looked like, okay, you know, we're going to test Friday's low. And then the last half hour is when the action came. Back in the good old days, you know, when the market used to move, and, you know, in that last hour. And so that was a little bit of unusual activity. We did back off the pre-market high this morning. So we'll see what kind of setup we got. But it'll be an interesting day tomorrow. I'll see what the Fed does and what the expectations are.
Well, you can understand maybe during the COVID. You know, the issue is when during the COVID, they drove the balance sheet way up, but now they're doing it again. They're pouring almost as much money into the system now as when during this recovery is when we were having trouble.
Employment's getting better. I mean, it's like we're looking at a set of factors, and we're trying to make decisions. And it seems like they have a whole different playbook that they're going from.
Right.
So. Yeah, I heard you mention the gold thing. I mean, ran into trouble at 1900. Silver doesn't seem like it ever wants to trade between over 20, over 30 or below 27. Those are in trading ranges. So I don't know. Gold, it's tough. You know, you think gold would finally bust out, but it hasn't. So,
all right, Joel, talk to you next week, buddy.
So you got a hop? Okay.
No, I thought you were. Go Blue, the Irish. I thought they were turning into a baseball school, and they lost to Mississippi State. So
we're a basketball school. You remember that, okay?
Yeah, I think we might be going to become a lacrosse school or something like that. Anyway, take care of yourself.
We did win the gymnastics championships.
Good for you. SP Futures up 4, and NASDAQ Futures up 23. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You could reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
I like the way sparkling earrings lay against your skin so brown. And I want to sleep with you in the desert tonight with a billion stars all around.
Hello, everyone. Thanks, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. He's Mr. Matt Weber. I don't think this guy wanted to sleep with anybody in the desert last night at 100 degrees.
I don't think so either. By the way, you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks, and we pretty much read most of the tweets that we get. Robert writes in, Chief, we were taught Columbus discovered America for at least 12 years. Turns out there were people living here for 12,000 years before him. So who changed and distorted history again?
Well, for the Europeans, it was a discovery. For the people who lived here, it wasn't. That's all how you define it, right?
There you go.
I mean, if I walk out west and I find there's a little canyon somewhere and there's a bunch of people living there, well, it's a discovery to me, right? It's not to them.
It's a discovery to you, yes.
Right? I discover stuff every day I should have known, right?
It's just for Americans to celebrate the discovery of America. When there were people here for 12,000 years is a little weird. It's one thing if the Europeans, I guess, celebrated it.
Well, since most people here are from Europe, I guess that's why they're celebrating it.
Yes.
Because, I mean,
well, it's because they killed everyone that was here originally.
Yeah, the Spanish did a pretty good job at that, didn't they? What, they killed 40 million people or some huge number?
Something like that.
Amazing what the first biological warfare, right?
Yeah.
Smallpox and... Matter of fact, I read, boy, this is not exactly table talk, but I think the only disease that went the other way, didn't we talk about this one day? Obviously, the Europeans brought smallpox, and they brought, what else did they bring? They brought measles and all that stuff over here, and that the Native Americans, well, they weren't Native Americans either. They came through the, what do you call it, the land bridge, right? Actually, you know, that's one of the most fascinating studies. And our buddy Robert actually had his DNA tested. And most people will go to the Ancestry.com, right, and get your DNA tested, and they tell you if you're, you know, Eastern Europe or you're Polish or you're Jewish or whatever, but or American Indian, I think they can. But the other, there's one that's I won't say a deeper test because they use the same blood, but they tell you what group you were, what thousand-year epoch you came out of Africa. And it's not intuitively obvious. Like, the people in Northern Europe came up Eastern Europe across the north before they went south, which is kind of weird. And I would have guessed you'd have stayed where the weather was warmer, but they didn't. And then there was a group that went to Asia, and then that group went to somewhere else that went to Polynesia. And, you know, some people still think that Polynesia... Which way did Thor Heyerdahl? Kon-Tiki? Didn't he write the book that said Polynesia could have actually been... populated from America and net Asia because of trade winds and a raft. Didn't he go from a raft to South America to, like, Polynesia or someplace?
I don't know anything about that.
Google up Thor Heyerdahl. He proved that you could actually get from South America to, you know, Polynesia on a raft. Well, I don't think it was even powered. I mean, I had a sail on it, but anyway. So, I mean, it's pretty interesting, and that's why people from Northern Europe and Ireland have a higher percentage of Neanderthal germ genes than other people. Because Neanderthals, the blood part of history you learned early was that You know, there was this group of humans, and there was this group. It turns out they cohabited for a long period of time. Homo sapiens cohabited with Neanderthals for, you know, hundreds of years. And there was, Neanderthals kind of were left in Northern Europe somehow, and there was a lot of interbreeding. So if you, people from Germany and Ireland, you know, might have 2% Neanderthal genes, and everybody else has 1%. Everybody's got some. It's really very fascinating. I mean, who wrote the email? He's into that. He knows that stuff real well, I think. Way better than me. So, what did you say? It was Robert who wrote the...
Yeah, Robert.
Yeah, I mean, I think he knows that stuff way better than me. But, yeah, Discovery... well, I mean, we discovered, you know, gunpowder someplace, and the Chinese had done it how many years before?
Yeah.
It was a discovery to us, right? Just interesting. I look at the politics, and I just wonder, Maddie, right now, I see Biden trying to take somewhat of a control. It just seems like everything's so scattered. Like, nobody really has... There's nothing coordinated, is there? And you do wonder, I talk about this in inflation. I do this for a reason, not just because I learned a lot of this stuff at the University of Chicago, but I've actually done a lot of reading, and Robert helped me out, my buddy from the Fed, a lot. I went through the history of the Weimar Republic. And I all I knew from even, you know, classes in college and stuff was these guys pumped a lot of money into the system. People wanted to get paid in the morning so they could go shopping at lunch and get chuffs cheaper than it would be at night. I mean, that's how bad it was. I mean, you got to the point where you needed a wheelbarrow of cash. And I just thought, God, these guys are totally incompetent. I mean, how can anybody do something that stupid? Well, it turns out that they thought that they, in their mind, the government's mind, it ended up, whoever these people are, I mean, what was the line in the verdict? Where the lady on the stand, the nurse said, "Who are these people? I wanted to be a nurse, and look what they did to me," right? Or something along those lines. We should probably get that quote. But they're doing this on purpose for a reason. Now, I think, in my getting increasingly, whatever you want to call it, conspiratorial mind, they're doing it for a purpose, and the purpose is to pay money back to people they don't think they can pay back. It's worth a lot less than the money they borrowed. And the reason why I think that is not only because it probably makes a little sense, is in the Weimar Republic, after World War One, it's a fascinating study, maybe, in human, and I'm 10% of the way there. If I ever got stuck on a cruise for 2 weeks, I would certainly bring you're going to laugh at me because you'd say, why don't you just use your Kindle, which I probably would, I don't want to lug the stuff on there. I'd probably bring like 8 or 9 books on World War One aftermath, the Versailles, and what happened during the 20s to these countries, because it ended up being a horrible treaty where Germany's paying all these reparations, and then France and Britain are paying money back to us because we loaned them dough, and then Germany's selling bonds over here that never paid people back, which is, can you think of any more of a circle jerk than that? I mean, we're selling stuff to American citizens that's going to Germany, that they're turning around and paying Britain and France, that they're turning around and giving back to our government, and the people never got paid back. I mean, you start reading this stuff. Well, it turns out that the Weimar Republic fiasco, with the inflation of, you know, 100% a week and stuff, was all done by the government. They decided they couldn't pay the reparations back to Germany or to France and England. So they said, okay, nothing in the treaty said that we got to pay him back with money that's worth what it is today. We can just pay him back any old crap as long as it's money. So they started pouring money into the system so that the money they owed Britain and France was worth a lot less than the money before. And so they started doing that. Of course, it got out of control for them, like it will here with these guys. And now all of a sudden it's runaway inflation. So you totally eviscerated your population. Anybody who had savings, anybody who had a job that somehow or another, the stock market, however, went straight up because it was asset. Stock market went from like a couple of hundred to a million or some huge number. It's just like ours is doing because the companies actually were worth more in the dollars that you were dropping by a rack every day. So if the price of bread is going up so much you got to leave at lunch, guess what? The price of the companies are going up too. So at the end of the day, you got to. They end up throwing the government out, or did something, a new government, and this is before Hitler. They ended up with the whoever the guys were that Hitler threw out, and so you ended up with a success on the part of the government. Because at the end of the day, the French and the British did say, you guys are so screwed up, we better renegotiate the terms. And they got better terms. So somewhere, crazy. So somewhere here, one of these bumps, 10 or 20 years from now, no matter what they do to people on fixed incomes or people don't get raises, at the end of the day, they're going to say, we succeeded. We paid Matty Weber back the $40 we borrowed from him in 2016 with $40. It's worth 48 cents. We, the government, succeeded. And I don't think that that's a success on the part of you, the citizen. I mean, there are people who think that that the government can succeed if the citizens don't. And that's what I'm sensing here, Matty. I'm sensing almost a Weimar attitude toward if the government succeeds in their screw ups and somehow the rich people get paid, or the people who own the stuff, which is mostly the 1 or 2%, if they get paid back, somehow it's all okay, barring a revolution where I don't get a bullet in the head, which, you know, of course, we know nobody wants to see. I mean, to me, it's way more than just a screw up at this time. At this point, do you think I'm totally nuts here or what? I mean, I know you have an opinion. Well, he's on the phone, I think. Good, he won't tell me I'm totally nuts. But no, I
do agree with you. Sorry, I was on the phone briefly.
I'm saying
there, but
it seems like it's getting worse. I really don't want to be right on this, and yet every week I'm just looking at it, and I'm getting more right. You know, the bridge, I think, hasn't been put up so much. Looks to me like it's sagging in the middle, right? I mean, anyway, let's get off this subject. But Matty, it's something I think we need to keep an eye on. I mean, I don't know who the we is, but somebody needs to. SP Futures down up 4.25, and NASDAQ Futures up 1975. Mike Hart's going to explain to us how all these crazy stocks, how all their volatility works, how you can trade them, because I'm having a loss on them. We'll be not a loss. Actually, we're up some money on some of them, but it's very confusing. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Low note bank stocks and jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber. We also have Mr. Mike Hart from Tasty Trade, who's going to get me off these crazy subjects. Unless he gets me back on, it would be his fault.
Speaking of, real quick, our guy Bill Cohan, who we've had on several times over the years, just wrote a really good piece in the New York Times about how the quantitative easing and the low interest rates are dangerous, and how much more can we take before the next financial blow up? We have to get him back on.
We have to get him back on. Of course, he agrees with me, so maybe you'll have to interview him. That's all right. You can do that. Manny does a better job than me. I think he's going to take over one of these days, Mike. What do you think?
He's on the right track.
Yeah, but I feel like Wally Pipp, for God's sake, you know, Manny. how many people do you think know who Wally Pipp is, you know? Anywho, how are you? How are things? What do you think about the Fed meeting today?
Things are going pretty well. You know, everyone's looking forward to the Feds, but let's be honest, does anyone really look forward to these things anymore? And has any real shock come out of the system lately that you can remember?
I was just mentioning before, to answer your question. When there is, it seems like it's telegraphed to some and not us.
That's true, but it's often the moves associated around Fed announcements have been very minimal. We don't see large spikes or movements, so I don't really even speculate on how a move of X amount is going to theoretically affect the prices. And especially when you try and do it on a stock-to-stock basis, it's a really difficult mathematical trick to figure out.
Well, I think that the right now, if I was smarter, you could, let's put it this way, if I had all knowledge, every time they do something different, though, and by the way, I'm going to agree with you that the Fed announcements, the official ones, most of the movement on Fed announcements are on some off-the-cup comment on one of the governors between meetings. That's where we still get some movement.
Sure. Maybe it's a little. And they're hard to understand. They're hard to interpolate.
And by the way, somebody seems to have them before you and I do. Just saying.
Well, that's always the case with these types of meetings.
Yeah, but I think that if we could probably be a lot better at picking the industries that are going to benefit from the policies if we knew more of the detail that are in there. I mean, you can't tell me that with this general inflation, somehow, someplace, there isn't some minor policy that is keeping a lid on gold and silver, whether they're liquidating something or whether they know some other country is or whatever, because, I mean, there's no way that the price of steel would be shooting up the way it is and the price of silver going nowhere normally, I don't think. I mean, I guess it could
happen.
And so, there's things here that are kind of weird. Certain industries that you would think would be benefiting aren't, and some are. And you know, obviously, the big guys are always going to benefit because they don't pay near as much in taxes. They don't pay, their interest rates are totally different. I mean, you surely can see difference in progress between big versus small. Just in, if you just trace how much people are paying for capital, I mean, there's no way you and I are going to compete, you know, as a plumbing company or as a bookseller with Amazon, who's getting their money at 2 or 3%. Not to mention,
correct.
Not to mention what Jeff was talking about is they're putting that on the backs of other people. So the other people, what do you suppose? I hope I don't jump this on you. Maybe this was more of a Jeff question, but you know all the stuff Jeff knows, right? But he was talking yesterday about Amazon not paying people for 60 days. So they're essentially floating their expansion on the backs of their customers. But their customers really aren't their customers. They're just a delivery system, right? So it's not you or I, the eventual customer, that's loaning the money to, you know, Joe's Jeep Fenders in South Carolina. It's we're paying Amazon right away, and they're not paying the other guys, which
correct.
To be very blunt, really sucks. Because why do they get to do that? If anybody should do that, we should do it. We're the customer, right? They're not. So,
well, the answer is they can.
Yes.
That's why
yes.
They're able to, because they can.
But the question for you is, if Joe's Jeep Parts in South Carolina, and everybody's different, if they go to their local bank and factor that receivable, I might as well define what that is. I think most people know. But if say PTI Securities wasn't a securities firm, but it was PTI Widgets, and people came and bought widgets here, usually you give somebody, well, this got a long time ago, Mike, you give maybe a 2% discount if you pay within 10 days. Otherwise, you'd expect your money in, say, 30 or 60, right, depending on the industry. So say it's 60. So I'm essentially going to float that money for 60 days for the people who don't send it in early, and I'm giving those guys a discount. I can take that. Now, if my clients or my customers are all, you know, good pay, which hopefully most of them are, I can then go to the bank and say, okay, I'll give you guys, the 30 people that owe me $1 million apiece, give me the $30 million for however many days it takes to you to get it. And there's going to be a price for that. They're going to say, okay, Tom, it's going to be, depending on the time, we'll do that, but now you're going to have to pay 7%, 8%, 10% interest on that money until we get the check. All right. I assume that if they get it in 30 days, they're not going to charge me for the other 30. Or actually, I think there's a number which they just take the whole mess, and it doesn't matter when they get it, right? So in other words, they're going to say, a 10% is not going to be for 2 months. It'll be on a yearly basis. What do you think that these people, in average, are paying to factor those receivables now? I'll bet it's still 5, 6, 7. I don't know. If one of the listeners knows, please tweet that in. I'll bet it's still not, it's not zero or one or two. I'll bet it's 5 or 6 still.
Whatever it is, I'm sure it's highly favorable for Amazon, and probably to the point of absurdity. If were it not for their sheer size, they can make up for a lot in just sheer size.
Well, those guys, when they go out and borrow, it's 2 or 3%. So they're not even, if they cared at all about these people, they would go out and borrow the money and then turn around and pay these guys back faster. And take a percentage discount based on their borrowing rate versus yours or mine. But they don't even do that.
I believe it. And with Amazon, you know, you look at the stock price over the progression over the past few years, we haven't seen a real downturn in Amazon. Now, we've seen periods of lower trading stock price following really high moves, but we haven't had periods, long periods of drawn out down months over months. They've been short-lived, and for the most part, Amazon's been an up-moving stock during this whole pandemic. It's done really well. We're trading near the highs. We're trading at $3,384 right now. IB rank is really low. So relatively speaking, over the past year, the IV rank, which is the measure that we're going to use to determine how much volatility is in this stock, is at 3.7%. That's really, really low if you're an option seller.
Well, yeah. You know who else is getting down there pretty much is Apple. Not as bad as Amazon.
Yeah,
how can I say this? If you walk in past the mature table, relatively mature table, Matty Weber and his guys sitting in the Tripoli that are now getting up there in years, and you go to the next table where everybody's 25, like they were when I met them, and you say, okay, what's the story with Amazon? But I got the best deal going. They can raise prices whatever they want. I mean, it's almost like they're managing them. Everybody has the feeling that they have so much power they haven't even used yet because they don't want to embarrass people. I mean, they could actually just raise the prices and screw people, their suppliers even more anytime they felt like it. So what you're saying, it translates into a stock price that just keeps creeping up on a long-term basis. Sure, they've actually been down. But you know, it's they're never in danger. But whatever people think they're doing is like against every law on earth. But that's what they're doing. As was
right.
You know, the Luckbox magazine, what you guys talked about or Jeff's group talked about, right?
Yeah, we did an entire magazine dedicated to just the power of this new paradigm shift that's out there, and just looked at it from a very neutral point of view. Of what is going on, what is changing, and what does this new garb of retailer mean for the rest of the world, the rest of the market, those kind of questions. And we just looked at it from the big picture standpoint.
Mike, what do you think? I mean, you're not as old as me, thank for you. What do you make? Do you think even in, or Maddie's getting old enough to answer this question too, do you think the constant falling behind of, I'll say, government and regulations such as there is, do you think the constant falling behind is just wrong people? Is it payoffs? Is it they're too dumb to see what's going on? They don't care. They get paid for it.
I think what it is actually is things move too quickly now for regulation to keep up. So there appears to be regulation not regulating, but in reality, I think things change around in those gray areas so often that we don't have a law for some things, or it's a very gray area of the law that we begin operating in, and it takes a long time for the regulators to catch up to the speed of the visionaries at this moment.
Well,
and maybe the speed of the internet is doing this.
But I guess my question to both you guys is, why? I mean, to a lot of people, it's incredibly obvious when somebody, I mean, it's sort of like, you know, you got a buffet line, you know, 2 Browning limit, and somebody walks up and grabs 4. It's not like everybody didn't see him grab 4, right? I mean, it's right there. I mean, have you ever been in any discussions in the last few years where somebody says to bring back Glass-Steagall? I'm sure you have, because you walk in those groups and they say, I wish, you know,
I've heard of it, yeah.
Wish Biden would bring. Now, what Glass-Steagall was basically said that a bank couldn't be a commercial bank and be an investment bank in the same bank. So it's separated from back in the 20s and 30s when the investment banks, sort of like, if Goldman Sachs is going to lose all their money, let them lose all their money. They can't, as long as they don't have commercial or retail deposits, demand deposits. In other words, if they don't have every man's money and it's all their money, I guess who cares? I mean, you care if it screws the system up, and you actually care if anybody loses money, even Goldman Sachs. But we're going to separate retail banking, commercial banking from investment banking. And that's what Glass-Steagall did for years and years. And I'm going to say, you can't ever really tell if it was a success or not, but it seemed to have been a success from, Matty, what year was Glass-Steagall? It had to be in the 30s somewhere. Till whenever it was repealed. Now, okay, you might say, well, let's bring it back. But here's what is bizarre, Mike, and I think we're both talking about.
1933.
Yeah, all that stuff happened in 33, 34. Securities Exchange Act of 33, and there was one of 34. But now along the line, somewhere, they passed something called a Bank Holding Company Act. Maybe look up the year on that if you don't mind. Now, what that said is, okay, Citigroup or Citibank couldn't buy Smith Barney, because Smith Barney was an investment firm.
1956.
Right. So somebody said, well, this isn't good enough. Let's try and find our way around this. So, okay, so Citibank couldn't buy Goldman Sachs. All right. But now all of a sudden the Holding Company Act said, well, wait a minute. Even though they can't buy them, what we'll do is we'll allow Citigroup to be formed that now owns Citibank, and oh, by the way, Citigroup can buy Goldman Sachs.
Right.
Which totally denuted the Glass-Steagall Act. And after years and years and years of this, when you had Citibank not being able to buy Smith Barney, which everybody knows they did, well, they didn't really. Citigroup did, because Citigroup owned both Citibank and Smith Barney. Now, Mike, I'm going to say that Mike Hart at age 5 knew that shouldn't be allowed to happen.
Yeah, that seems like a good one to get rid of, because it obviously wasn't working for what it was supposed to be doing, and it was just slowing the process down, and I wouldn't like to see that one get brought back.
Well, so when at the day they got rid of Glass-Steagall, my point is, the day they got rid of it, it didn't make any. It was useless because everybody had ducked under this other act. So instead of Citibank, no, couldn't own Smith Barney, but guess what? Citigroup could own both of them together, which got you to the same place, right? So they basically, the Bank Holding Company Act, without going in front of your population and saying, we're now going to let investment banks be together with commercial banks, we did this instead. So we essentially ran an end run around our population to the benefit of the bankers. So now they could be financed by stuff that was insured by the FDIC and so forth, which is exactly what the people in 1933 didn't want to have happen. Because part of this whole thing was, we're now going to insure the deposits of people who put their money in the bank. And the last thing anybody wanted was having a federal insurance of your mother's money being part of the same place where you're trading on the money, right? But now this act in the 50s, probably nobody, without much fanfare, allowed it to, over a period of time, essentially denut the... So the stuff you're seeing today, I think, is sort of the same thing. I mean, there's always these kind of workarounds, you know, like you were mentioning earlier. I mean, well, the guys shouldn't be able to... I mean, Amazon gets to do all... I mean, I'm going to say Microsoft. Yesterday, somebody was talking about it. How many other companies they buy per year that have... They see somebody who has a invention or something, or a company that looks like it might be a competitor, they go and buy them. Well, I shouldn't even say the number. I thought they said 50, but I kind of had one ear when I was talking to a client, so I'm not actually listening to the TV. But there was some number. It was in the 20s or like 30s a year that are their purchases they make that are so small nobody even. But every one of these places has some sign of an innovation that instead of it becoming an innovation in a competing company, they just suck up. But somewhere along the line here, you got to tell Microsoft you've made your last acquisition. That's it for you. I don't care what it is.
Well,
You would think, but that's never going to happen. But the places they grab, nobody knows. I don't know that that Maddie and his brother got some little thing going on with a computer. It's the next invention. And they're sitting there in their garage, like David Packard. They say, "Hey, how would you guys like $10 million?" And I got to believe Maddie jumps at it in a second. How does he know the thing 5 years from now is going to be worth $1 billion? You know, he knows he's never going to make it to $1 billion because in this, nobody small can actually grow here without being bought by somebody else. I mean, I won't say never, but it's pretty rare. So I mean,
very, very rare. Yeah.
Anyway. Talking too much. Explain to me how we trade. I've noticed a phenomenon in we're talking about page two, in the AMC and a lot of these companies that are in play, BlackBerry and there's probably five of them. What's the other ones like Plug and there's a few. I'll rattle them off here as I remember them. But you know what I've kind of noticed, Mike, and I've never seen this phenomenon before. You either have a skew to the upside. Which you do in commodities and so forth, and we're starting to see in some of these stocks, or GameStop, or a skew to the downside, but you normally get both. And I've seen some, matter of fact, in AMC, I actually did a spread in, what's the other ones? CLOV. I've actually got a few positions in there where the puts run up to the downside, and then they run up to the upside, and actually, out of the money, maybe three or four strikes, there's a put that still has a high volatility, but it's the lowest one in the chain. It's like the and it's if it's a smiley face, it's where the chin would be, and the other ones might be 320 volatility, which is really high, scooting up to 400 on both ends. But this is the one that's 320. So what I've been trying to do is find a way to buy that one, ratchet one of the other ones against them in a way where I'm not short contracts and. I'm having a little bit of success, not as much as I would have liked, but it's early. It might actually work pretty well because it looks like I can jump from week to week pretty easily. But have you ever seen that before? Where there's one in the middle that's like the lowest, the lower vol.
No, typically no, you don't see that. Possibly because the volume's so high, just that volume's trying to get eaten up before it moves the market. But usually the markets stay relatively. Perfectly in line. It's all very mathematical. The one thing I will say about the skew reversing on you, that is a rarity. You do not see that often. Usually the skew is one way or the other. But what you also might likely be seeing is hyper skew to one side and just an exceptional amount of skew to the other side. So AMC right now has, I would say, hyper skew to the call side, but there's still a lot of value to the put side on those puts. So you can get paid quite a bit if you're willing to go in there and make a bet that AMC isn't going to go to, pick your level.
Well, I mean, I was looking at it. Actually, it's not as bad as it was a couple weeks ago, but it's still pretty bad. Like the my machine here cuts the vols off when the market's not up. But I'm going to say the 80 put, the stock's trading 57.95. I'm going to say the 80 put is I'll say 300 vol. But the call. And but the top call, whatever it is going to be like four something because the top one, everybody just wants the units. It's really weird. Everybody wants the top couple strikes Where if you look at them and you go, these, well, last night, I mean, 100 call for this Friday closed at $1.40 something. Oh, God, I mean.
Which stock is this?
This is AMC. So going from 57 to 100, today's Tuesday. I mean, sit there and go, it's kind of a long way between, in 3 days. But still, I mean, this thing is all over the place. But I mean, I don't think there's natural sellers of that. I mean, we're not going to let anybody do that here at PTI.
No.
Well, if you do have a level five, which we got like a few people that do, and a guy with $1 million account says, sell me five, I mean, I'll do it. You know, if he says, sell me 500, I'm going to say, you know, but I mean, there's a number. I mean, if you dropped your $10 million account over here, Mike, and said, I want to sell one of them, what am I going to say? No. I mean, right? I mean, it's all questions.
No, you're going to go ahead and sell it. But that said, you're absolutely correct. The amount of margin that you're going to have to put up it's a huge amount of margin for just the one lot. Let me give you an example. If you were to sell the 145 calls, this is $100 away from where the money is right now. So $145, you bet it doesn't go above there. It's going to potentially make you $760 if you're right that it doesn't go above 145 in the next 31 days. If you're right, you make that, but you have to put up $8,500 in order for that to actually be achieved. So you're putting up quite a bit of margin is what it's known as in order to pay for that, that one call. So it's a lot of risk for what turns out to be not as much maybe reward if you lay it out in pen and paper.
Yeah, what happens, Mike, and it sounds like you're, I mean, I'm supposed to know this, right? Which I, you know, I did and I do, I guess, at some point, but not as much as my brother does it all day long. What happens with your margin on a if you put up, if you want to buy a stock, if you want to buy AMC, the margin is set by the Federal Reserve, correct? So if you want to buy 1,000 shares, let's call it 58, you have to sell, you have to send TastyTrade or PTI a check for 29,000, right, or 28,500. But you don't have to pay the full 57. And if it starts to go down on you, you've got a 30% maintenance margin. So if it goes down $1, you don't have to send us a check the next day, which you would in commodities, by the way. But so when you do calls or puts and they're naked, essentially you start out with the same margin, but then you can subtract the part that's out of the money because you're further and further away, right, Mike? But
they can actually go down in the amount that you need to put up.
But what companies are free to do, well, in our case, PTI wouldn't make the call. RBC would, or IB. You guys aren't self-clearing, are you? So you wouldn't exactly make the call, I don't think.
No, we're not.
But if you were, so what people, but if you do the math and say, okay, 50% of this thing is $28 or $2,800, right? But the amount out of the money is 45. So if you did the math, there wouldn't be any margin, right, Mike? Because it's so far out of the money. So what people do then,
right,
they put a minimum in there and say no matter what, you know, you're going to you got to pay 20% or something. So that's what you're talking about. It's probably a minimum because if you actually dropped the 140s into the formula, they're so far out of the money that there wouldn't be anything, right?
Right, it wouldn't make sense, so you almost have to do it that way.
So there's going to be a 15 or 20% minimum, which is actually set by the clearing firm and not the Fed, correct?
It's set by the clearing firm, so it's a clearing firm to clearing firm choice where they want to set it.
Yeah.
But usually they do it based off this. They all use the same models, really. So any clearing firm that you're getting is usually what the other clearing firm gets as well. Some people trade off of portfolio margin,
right,
which just gives them a better margin rate. But it's still, for the retail side, you know, it can actually make you think you have less risk on. You still have the same amount of risk, and you should view that margin as how risky the market is taking this bet right now. Because, view the actual broker as sort of the casino making the odds and being on the other side of that trade for the time being, and they need you to put up enough in order to cover losses should they occur.
Well, plus you also, you look at your client, and you can't do this, but the reason why this all happened when Maddie was talking about in the 30s, you really, really talk about this stuff, is that before 1929, the margins were not set by the Fed, correct? So the margin became part of the competitive process, which you don't want. The last thing you want is for somebody to call up PTI and say, how much, if I want to buy 1,000 shares of GameStop or AMC, what do you got to send me? And we say 28.5 to be able to call, you know, Joe's discount brokerage and say, hey, you only got to send me 10. I mean, you really don't want that because that stock then has to go to the bank and the bank takes the money and then there's an amount that they can lend the securities firm on the stock, grabbing, all that stuff happens. You really don't want that being part of the competitive process, do you, Mike? I mean, you just don't.
No, you don't. Yeah, you definitely want to regulate that out.
So, but what, now with this other stuff, the minimums, I mean, I got to believe that Mike's firm or PTI is going to say, all right, if a client calls up or a would-be client and says, all right, I want to buy 1,000 shares of AMC, and I say, okay, well, you got to open up an account, duh, and you got to fund it. But what's the minimum I got to send you? Well, of course, it doesn't take much for everybody at Tasty Trade or PTI for the hair to go up on the back of their neck and say, who's this guy, right? I mean, when you hear that question. But if a guy's got an account he's had with you for 10 years, he's got $1 million in there, and he's got no margin borrowing at all, and he wants to buy 1,000 shares of AMC, you don't even give it a second thought, right? I mean, it depends. A lot of it's customer relations, but you still can't maneuver around with the number because that's set, which I think is a good idea.
The number is absolutely set, and you're right, that's a good thing. It would be a very chaotic system were it not set and set at the higher level. It'd be an odd thing to compete over.
That's right. We're going to break here, Mike. We'll catch you when we come back. SP Futures now up 3, NASDAQ Futures up 19. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Mike Hart with us. S&P futures now up a buck and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up a buck. So we're slip sliding here a little bit, but we're still up. We're up yesterday. Well, we're up flat to up kind of across the board. Rainier up this morning. We've got the DAX up 85.5%. That's actually down a little bit from the last time we talked. FTSE up 36.5. CAC around up 33.5. So they're 0.5 across the board. Asia can never be consistent these days, though. Nikkei up a percent at up 279. Shanghai down 33. That's a percent. Hang Seng down 203. That's 0.7. So those guys have been going different directions now for a while, seemingly. Yesterday, the Dow was up down 85. S&P is up 7. NASDAQ up 104. So kind of a slow day. Bonds unchanged at 1.50 10-year rate. The Bund positive 0.01 and minus 0.24. Japan positive 0.02. Now back up to positive 0.05 after being down to positive 0.02.5. So they're almost going zero, below zero again. Oil up now 92 cents. It's on 1.3%, 71.90. Brent up 80 cents, 73.66, 1.1%. Natural gas down 2 cents at 3.33. RBOB up a penny at 2.18. Gold up $1.40, but now back down to 1867. So slap back again from 1900. Can't seem to break through there. Same way with silver, 28.70. Can't get up past 29. Just keeps getting there and gets smack like a whack-a-mole. Copper down 17 cents, 4.34. And we've got Bitcoin up 386. Now it was up, well, it was back through 40,034. Again, Fed meeting today, announcement tomorrow. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Earlier crashes on both sides of the Kennedy are now clear, so that's the good news. The bad news is there's a lot of resulting traffic in both directions on the Kennedy, especially on the inbound side, so that's a slow-moving expressway right now, but no accidents currently to report. Edens looks okay, though. Traffic building heavily on the Eisenhower and the Stevenson. Southside expressways could say the same. The only crash in the area is on the inbound Bishop Ford. This is right at Sibley Boulevard, which is exit 71, and that's causing delays on the inbound Ford. But no other accidents on any of the other expressways. We do still have that police activity on the south side that has Morgan closed between 63rd and 61st. There was a shooting this morning at 6221 South Morgan. Multiple gunshot victims and possibly multiple fatalities as well. So police are also blocking 62nd between Carpenter and Sangamon. I think that's how you say that.
That's exactly how you do. I used to live a block down.
There you go. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, lots of sunshine, mild temperatures, a high of 74, a bit warmer inland, but a beautiful day overall. Right now it's crystal clear and 65 going up to a breezy 74. For our Phoenix listeners, they're going to wish they had that weather. Sunshine with a high of 117 today. Right now it's clear and 89. In sports, all three of our baseball teams, two in Chicago, one down in Phoenix, lost last night, and all three lost by the same score of 5-2. Sox lost to the Rays 5-2, Cubs lost to the Mets 5-2, and you guessed it, the Diamondbacks lost to the Giants 5-2. College baseball, Notre Dame was one game away from qualifying for the College World Series for the first time since 2002. But they came up short, falling behind big early. They rallied back to make it somewhat interesting, but they fell to Mississippi State 11-7, losing 2 out of 3 in that qualifying series.
Well, they were up 4 late Friday night and blew it.
That was the tough one.
Actually, Saturday night.
Yeah, they were up game 1 late and blew that one. Then they came back in game 2 and won easily. And you sort of thought they would carry that momentum into Game 3, but then they fall behind early and then, yeah, had to scramble back.
Well, they all got to be on their 7th and 8th pitchers.
Well, I think the Irish definitely were hoping not to have to start the kid they started last night, even though I'm sure he's a good pitcher, but they're going pretty deep into the rotation, I think.
Yeah, he looked like me out there. Wasn't the best.
Soft-tossing left-hander?
I would be a soft-tossing left-hander if I could get it there left-handed. I guarantee you it wouldn't be a hard-tossing left-hander, that's for sure. Producer prices climbed 6.6% in May on an annual basis, largest 12-month increase on record. Now, we're going to listen to this bump tell us tomorrow that he just can't get this inflation back to 2% because everything's transitory?
Maybe. And before you get back to Mike, a little housekeeping. Speaking of inflation and the Fed, our guy Bill Cohan, William Cohan, financial writer and
columnist. He wrote an opinion piece in the New York Times this morning that's really good, basically echoing a lot of the same points that you've been making for a while now. And he's going to come back on the show Thursday morning. So
cool.
We got Bill back Thursday morning. So just an FYI.
He was a great interview.
Great interview, and I said he'd be delighted, as always.
Cool. So I'll let him talk about it instead of me.
Well, if you check out his piece after the show, I already read it and tweeted it out. It's really good. And nothing surprising in there, but talk about a guy that agrees with you.
Well, I got a piece from Kevin that I'm going to dig through today more, and it has to do with somebody. It's a, I don't know if it's a YouTuber or what it is, but some guy talks for a half hour regarding this. I'm going to listen to it. I can report on it tomorrow. Kevin will be here because we had a question regarding the lumber last week, right? Or was it yesterday? We had a question regarding lumber prices.
Yep.
And so, Mike, every time there's a specific inflation in a specific spot, it's usually part of the general inflation, okay, and part of what's going on in that particular spot. It's fairly, it's sort of like the Arab oil embargo. Say that five times real fast, or something like that, or the 6-day war. Those things happen. So I'm anxious to listen to this where there's all kinds of stuff that have gone on in that industry. A little bit of tariffs, a little bit of a shortage of trucks, shortage of truck drivers. It's all kind of piling together into, it's affecting that industry more than others, which I guess it's always like a lot of little things, right, Mike? I mean, in addition to the overriding thing, there's too much money because this was so hard to, it's almost like a lifetime study. If you have a vibrant economy, okay, your prices of individual items are always moving up and down based on stuff that happens in those industries, right, Mike? I mean,
supply and demand.
If you have somewhat of a drought, someplace, and so that, you know, you don't get enough corn to market, it's normal and quote healthy for the price of corn to creep up a little bit based on somewhat of a supply shortage. If somewhere the Fed or whoever it is, not the Federal Reserve, but can find a way to sell, you know, 90 bazillion bushels of corn to Eastern Europe or someplace that has a drought over there, that's going to affect the supply here and it should creep up a little bit. But it's not the kind, in other stuff, there might be, all of a sudden, like I bought some eggs this weekend cheap. There might be, everybody thinks that the egg business is spectacular, so five guys build a new egg farm. All of a sudden, there's kind of too many eggs, and the price of eggs might drop from $12 a carton to 10. This stuff goes on all the time, up and down, all over. That's the definition of a free economy. It's healthy. That's why people like Maddie, like Mike, like the listeners. That's why you look around if you're looking, if you don't want a job, if you're an entrepreneurial sort of dude, you sit there and go, "Gee, why the hell are the price of shorts scooting up?" And somebody might say, "Well, some guy had his shorts. This company, the president stole all the money, so this shorts factory went out of business." Well, it might lead you to go buy the place. It might lead you to start your own. That identifying things that are either too high or too low priced is the way the economy functions. That's why somebody says, "Hey, I can make money at that price in shorts. I'm going to make some shorts." That's what defines America, right, Mike? And I don't think...
Well, that's where, in theory, that's where the incentives should come from.
Right.
Is from a market being available and opportunity being there, being able to spot those opportunities, taking advantage of them, and in by doing so, making the market itself more efficient.
Well, and the guy who says that, "I'm going to go make shorts." God, I hate them. Make shorts. You can find something that fit me. But the, you know, that's what causes that guy to go buy concrete for the base of the factory. He's got to go to the bank to get a loan, and that's the reason why you and I are supposed to get paid 2-3% on my passbook, because the bank is lending that money to me, who thinks I'm going to make 20% on shorts, and I'm willing to pay 6% for the money. That's what makes the economic world go round, right? Or should. And the
that's
more,
what it makes, nuts and bolts right there.
Now, whenever you get, "Oh, no, you got to pay 30%, we're going to let Microsoft pay 1%, or the government..." Wait, what are you talking about? I mean, I've never not paid anybody back in my life. Doesn't matter. You're not big enough. All that stuff starts entering the system. All it does is screw things up, Mike, I think. And it's kind of what our theme is here on this show. Whenever you mess up the system that the way it's supposed to be, you end up screwing it up, I think.
Well, you know, ultimately the market is the great decider of these things, and just how bad the damage is, I think it's too early to tell. Well, obviously the market hasn't reacted poorly to any of this, but I agree with you. I think when you change the actual makeup of the market, the dynamics of what has been working, short term, we might even see what we have seen, which is a long term rise in prices, and it may be viewed as a good thing for the market. But it has a longer-term view as being something that could be negative. In fact, it may turn out to be negative. We could see, you know, some real sell-offs in this market. And, you know, I personally have been getting a little more negative in my accounts, a little less aggressive to the upside. I've never been aggressive to the upside this whole time, but I'm getting less and less so for things like this, things that are standing out and aren't looking right. The typical way of doing things has been rearranged so much that we don't know what is typical anymore.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, there's people that, I mean, for me, it's if something is a really horrendous trade to where you're never going to do it, I think it's not long standing. I mean, in 1980, borrowing money at 15%, I don't know who the hell could make money doing that. I mean, if I build a million-dollar factory and I got to pay $150,000 a year just for the money, I mean, I got to sell a lot of cans of soup to make that $150,000 back, right? Just to pay that guy off. The more I look at it, I'm stunned it went this far. So I've been wrong the whole way in terms of timing. But the idea that I'm going to give when the inflation is 6.6% and the producer prices, that I'm going to give somebody my money to use for 1% or 1.5% is totally what manner of moron would do that. So now for a short period of time, can the Fed or somebody, you know, knock the market out of whack? Yeah, but we're pushing 14, 15 years here on this, you know, ever since 2007. Sure. I mean, somewhere that's just a horse bleep trade. And the Fed is spending buku bucks to essentially influence the market price, so that's all you're going to get. And now, but it seems like now on a perfectly growing market, it's costing them $30 billion a week to maintain this game or whatever you want to call it. I mean, I don't know if it's not a game, but it's because obviously you're playing for keeps. But why all of a sudden now is it so important for them, other than now that they have the debt that they can't let? Obviously, they don't want to pay more. So, but now it's at a point where the inflation, by them doing what they're doing, it's like running out to a fire and throwing gas on it. Every week they're making it worse, I think. I mean, am I wrong?
It feels like that. No, it feels like that. And we've been talking for how long, Keith, about how serious this inflation problem is going to be. This is going to be the driving problem with the new economy, is the inflation, and how does the inflation actually stabilize within the rest of the moving parts. And the answers are really difficult to say. I mean, when it comes down to it, what does the Fed have at their disposal? Actionable things that they can do. They can adjust short-term interest rates price. That's their main action. That's what they do. So that's the only thing you can do, really, to combat the ability for the cost of money.
But right now, and the question I have for you, because it's going to affect how I trade, how you answer, how the hell in the last 3 or 4 weeks, just as these numbers are essentially breaking out to the point where nobody can deny them anymore, have we had interest rates go back down and the VIX go down? I mean, that is incredible to me. I mean, that we actually have had long-term rates have gone from 1.68 down to 1.48. During the time when we had this massive CPI number, that it's become conversation all day long everywhere, not just on my show. For a while, we were the only people talking about it, Mike. Now everybody's talking about it. And the rates have actually gone down, not up. And the VIX, you're talking about, now it's reaching a point where it's going to affect the market. The VIX is going down, not up. So how are they pulling this off? Is it because it's the $30 billion a week keep pouring in? They're just overwhelming opinion, but by money or what?
I think it has a lot to do with it. I think it has a whole lot to do with it, is the money being poured into the system, is supporting the system, and they haven't really talked about pulling back on that money yet, and there's just a real certainty that the money is just going to keep appearing from somewhere. And as long as you keep filling the system with liquid cash, it's going to maintain this sort of, feels like a house of cards. If all these numbers were to come to roost, it doesn't, everything is counterintuitive right now, which is why I'm having a hard time figuring out what's going on as well.
Well, I'm having real trouble.
No question about it. After 2 years, we're at the lowest levels of volatility.
What we had the auction last week of the 10-year, and I think it came in at, what, 1.48 something? Like, lower than anybody thought. At the end of the day, now we're a week later, how much of that auction do you think has ended up on the Fed balance sheet?
I actually wouldn't be able to know, because I don't know the policy of how the movement of policy all that well.
Well, it's going to go out to auction to other people. I don't know. I mean, I'll have to ask my guys at the Fed. I don't know if the Fed can actually go to the auction and buy something from the Treasury. I bet they can't, because that would be so screwed up. I can't even go there. But it'd be a long explanation. But that would be akin to saying, let's just print it and spend it, right? But I have a feeling that the people who buy it can turn around and send it to the Fed an hour later. Or, and it wouldn't be the same 10-year bond, probably, but what's the difference? Right? As long as it's another 10-year
bond. Right, that would make sense, sure.
I bet they've been actively buying them, and that's why the balance sheet has gone up $30 billion. I bet they bought, 15, 20 of them right back already. It's now on their balance sheet. So, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. I mean, I've read stuff in fleeting, or we've had some guests that say some of the CUSIP issues are like 30, 40, 50% Fed. And I think you were on one day, and we were talking about some of the stuff in Europe where they're maintaining this negative interest rate, that the central bank owns,
yep,
like, what, 70, 80% of a CUSIP number? Every single security, be it a bond or stock or anything really, has a CUSIP number, right, Mike? You probably know more about this than me. So, like, if you go buy a particular, you don't just, in other words, if you go out and buy a 10-year bond, if you come to PTI or wherever you go, say, I want to buy a 10-year bond, why you would, I don't know. But if you do, we're going to go find one for you. There's going to be, it could be the one from the auction, where are we, 2021? It could be from the November 2020 auction, or it could be, 9 years, 8 months left on it, right? There's all kinds of these things out there, right, Mike? Yet every
right,
single,
just
every,
different, just yeah, different expirations, cycles, because they all have expirations. So usually it's a collection of different expirations, and we average them.
But every single one, every individual one, has an individual CUSIP number for that offering, correct?
That's right. Yep, correct.
I don't know if you were you ever back when the interest rates were huge traders. Well, they still are with the Board of Trade. It was a 30-year bond, Mike. I was a member.
I never got big into the 30-year. I did a lot of euro dollars, not the euro dollars that you trade as currency, but the euro dollars that are traded as million-dollar deposits. U.S. dollar, million-dollar deposits in banks,
right,
outside of the U.S., interest rates on those. Those were actually, they still might be the most popular traded futures, but I would trade a lot of those more,
really,
short-term type interest rate products.
But I'd love to talk to you about that someday, because it's one market I didn't know a whole much about. But when I started, there weren't any stock futures, right? So you traded off, the bonds were the first big future at the Board of Trade financial future, and you traded off the bonds. So if the bonds,
right,
went running up, it meant that your interest rates were going down, because the interest rates were high at the time. So that meant that was positive for the market. So the bonds and the stocks moved. So if you walked in one day and the bonds are up $20, all the stocks are going, or 20 ticks, all the stocks are going to open up most of the time. That was your,
right,
that was your future. You watched the 30-year bonds. But I was a member of the Board of Trade, and those things, like most futures, or like all futures, I guess, they're deliverable, right, Mike? So if all of a sudden I'm short the bonds, I could actually show up with the bonds, say, here they are, I mean, that's why futures.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, that's why futures prices at the end equal the cash prices, right? Because they're deliverable. Well, Mike, they used to send me this thing in a big brown envelope every 3 months they would expire. I get this thing in the mail, and it was, they didn't, there was a bond, right, that was the one that you traded, right? So there, it actually was an 8.5% bond. 8.5%. Not 1.5, 8.5. And the thing was trading.
Yeah, that is enormous.
And guess where the low tick was? It was like 66 cents on the dollar, which equates to what? 12.5-13% was the market rate. But they didn't expect you to deliver. I mean, how the hell I would say I was short $2 million worth of bonds and had to deliver them. Well, how the hell I would go get that particular bond? How would I even locate the damn thing, right? So they would send you this huge list of like every 30-year bond. So if I actually had a couple of $1 million worth of 30-year bonds I could find, there was a ratio there. If I had this other CUSIP number, I had to bring like 1.003 times the regular one, or 0.9994. So I actually would have to bring, I might have to bring, if I brought a different bond, I'd have to bring $2 million and say $500 worth, or $1,999,950. So somebody went through and made the ratio for, there had to be 100 of them in there, 100, maybe 500 different CUSIP. It's real complicated. It's fascinating, but it's complicated. But you could show up with.
It's amazing that you had to do it that way. It seems so impossible in this day and age now. I mean, compared back then, it was the only way, but now it just seems so hard.
Well, but I mean, it still was hard to go get them, or to get them. I mean, the point was the bond that was being traded, the open interest in that particular bond was probably 100 times of that particular CUSIP number being out there, right? So you couldn't deliver that way. Anyway, so all these things have their own, you know, CUSIP now. Every single, be it a stock or whatever, which, you know, actually is pretty organized and put together, Mike. I mean, and we don't ever want to lose that, I don't think. I mean, it would be really chaos if we didn't. And none of that stuff happened before 33. So you can only imagine what a fiasco these bonds were in stocks.
I can imagine, right?
Well, that's why, I mean, literally, you call up the bank, and they'd say, this is a great buy. Well, who's selling it to you? Well, we are. Okay. Are there audited books? Nah, we don't have any audited. I mean, the idea of having audited financial statements didn't show up till what, the 33 Act or the 34 Act. Can you imagine not having buying companies and selling companies that weren't audited and didn't have any financial statements that you could get?
It's almost amazing to believe a system like that existed when you compare what we have now in place. But even now is riled with regulations that are getting pressed to the limit, like we've been talking about all show with Amazon and tax type habits and things like that. They're changing the game. They're changing the way things are being priced, and they're changing movements of world markets.
It's also changing your theory. Can you imagine if you were a guy, I won't say like Maddie, like our friend Thomas, we always use as our foil. Imagine him being sitting in a class at wherever it is. You know, it could be Notre Dame, it could be Chicago, it could be Illinois Business School, and the professor comes out and he says, okay, we got all these numbers, this company's going to do this, assume a 30% tax rate, blah, blah, blah. And somebody raises their hand and goes, hey, coach, or prof, what if you're Amazon and you're only paying 3%? I mean, nobody would ever do that. And yet now, all these exercises that people used to do based on these assumptions, the assumptions are, they're all screwed, right? Because everybody pays something different depending on how big you are. I mean, I don't even teach theory anymore, Mike.
I totally agree. Like, it never really occurred to me that that would be a thing one day. And now it's completely on the forefront of everything that's going on. It does change the game. And it makes you question, how do you play these stocks going forward, knowing that's how the game's going to be played going forward?
Well, you'd be like Rodney in Back to School. Hey, you got to pay off the garbage man. You got to pay off this guy. Pretty much right. I mean, it almost is the exact scene, right? What about this guy?
That's
he doesn't pay.
Yeah.
So, what do you think? Or what are the Fed's going to say? What do you think is news conference? Is he going to stumble around, or is he going to be okay?
I think it's just going to be fine. I don't think we'll see much coming out of this news conference. In fact, I don't see much coming out of the Fed. I think this is a Fed that's driven by the market right now. And until we see market movement, we're not going to see the Fed react. It's a reactionary Fed. So I think we see sort of run-of-the-mill report today, and eventually we see a big move in the market that's going to cause a Fed response. But that's right. Just my 2 cents.
All right, bud. Take care. Talk to you next week. SP Futures up 1.25. NASDAQ Futures now down 4, so they flipped. Again, his PPI number was 6.6%, highest on record. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.